is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news and intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversations. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of the management and staff of Guardian Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Guardian Radio in the AM. I would like to thank Guardian Radio for allowing me this opportunity. I'm Catherine Chisnell Mitchell and my guest today to discuss and uplift each other with this forum. I thank my friend C.A. Nuri for allowing me his time slot today and Guardian Radio for always being open to these kind of conversations that despite the distress in our headlines, we still have beautiful spots of brightness and light in our community. And I have two of those lights with me today. I have been privileged to be with being involved with the Children's Homes of the Bahamas for over 22 years, which ages me a little bit. And I've been with Ranfurly Homes for Children on their board and as a mentor for the last 14 years. Today, I have two exceptional young men in the studio, Evans Presume and Richard Estime, who are both intelligent, very, very handsome today. They made me look good in my photo. Motivated, conscientious, caring, and I think focused on a purposeful future ahead. And we are honored to have them share their stories, their trials, their challenges, and their insight into what their lives are looking at like right now. And I'm so very, very proud. I've known them since they were children. They were little boys. And I have watched in real time as they've made their accomplishment on that which is by no means the easy burden of being a young man in today's culture. And with the exceptional step up from coming from a foster care system and stepping into society as contributing citizens. These gentlemen have realized that they're not saved by the system, they're saved by purpose. And they're not speaking from theory, they're speaking from survival. And they have survived. They've survived tremendous trauma exposure, financial instability, housing insecurity, social isolation in the form that they don't have the traditional family from which they come. And they've met this with great courage. And you know that, again, being in the home care systems of the country for many, many years, and I have to give a shout out to my Ranfurly board and all our team and volunteers, and thank everyone who supported our raffle last week. But home care in this country does not guarantee a happy ending. It is a hope, it's an effort for a safer, healthier, more stable start. And to, and to that we can give a leg up to a life that's not that is promised to be imbued with challenge, but with strength can also come with purpose. Bliss and ease are not the goal when we bring our children into our homes, but we are hoping that they find belonging, security, support, and a healthy future citizenship. And that's what we're striving for, healing. So with the two young men today who are by all accounts doing exceptionally in their own entrepreneurship, in their own careers, I'm going to go and allow them to have the microphones and tell us a little bit about each of themselves, a little bit about their extraordinary stories, and then we can get a little bit into their insight of what their life was like coming out of the home care system and what they're doing with those lessons and with that insight now. So I'm going to ask you both to introduce yourselves into the mic. You can go ahead, Evans.
My name is Evans Bazoom.
And I'm Richard Estime, and I also go by Hercule Estime as well.
And I'm very, very, again, proud to have you here today. Now, Evans has bravely spoken about his story on many occasions, but I'm going to allow him right now to take us back to what he can remember as his beginnings, where he remembers being a young boy and the start of his childhood journey. Evans, can you tell us a little bit about your background and where you come from?
Sure. My name is Evans Bazoom. My background is a funny story. Not really funny, but scary as well for a small child. So my father died when I was very young age. My mother couldn't afford to take care of me, my brothers and sisters. For me to sit around asking people for money to buy something to eat for my family. It got so bad sometimes that I would go into people's yard to steal fruits or vegetables or whatever I could find to bring back for my family so we can eat something. It became a habit at a very young age, stealing at that age. One day, my mom got a phone call from a neighbor. He saw me, my brothers and sisters. He saw me in the yard stealing vegetables or whatever I could get. So my mom decided to burn both of my hands.
How did, Evans, I don't want to interrupt you, but where were you in the Bahamas at this point? Were you in Nassau? Where were you exactly?
I was in Nassau when this happened before I came in the system.
Okay, so this was happening in Nassau Island where you were growing up with your family, and your mother found you and she burned you. How did she burn your hands?
I was a small little kid. I couldn't really, defend myself. She grabbed both of my hands. She cut on the stove and she just put my hand on the light up, the burner.
Okay. So, go ahead.
So it didn't, the pain was outrageous, but it didn't stop me from stealing. So we also steal from the food store, me and my brothers. We got caught stealing. We end up getting beat so badly from stealing. Somebody on the sidewalk saw us and decided to call the police. And they called the police. The police asked us questions, who did it. I was scared to admit that I, steal because I didn't want to get beaten again. And I say to myself, they'd rather burn my hand instead of beating me like that,
Mm-hmm.
So the police did their investigation, found out where we were living at that time. And the search and service came of, in that case, and then we end up leaving our mom. So I was in the system for quite a while. I came out when I was 19 years old.
Do you remember how old? So you were forced to steal because you were trying to feed your siblings. And for that, you were punished with your hands being burned. And eventually the police were called. And social services stepped in to bring you into the home care system. Do you remember how old you were when that intervention happened?
Very young. I probably was around 5, 6.
And being beaten and burned, you were a very, very young child. And that's when you were taken into the system. And then you went into the system. And what are your memories of that time?
Scary.
Mm-hmm.
When the emergency hostel, was scary, fun at the same time. They get bullied as a child, but overcome the bullying. And my mom came to visit us once in a while, and social service also is working with her, trying to get us out the system. And we managed to get out the system, and we end up going back in the system, basically.
So you said that you were bullied, and you were bullied why? Because you were weak and little, and that was the environment of the home at the time?
No, I was bullied from my parents because I am a Haitian background. My mom is a Haitian. My dad is a Bahamian, and I couldn't speak English properly.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got bullied for that. So.
And why was it fun? You also said it was fun. Was it that it was a feeling of camaraderie, family, peership?
Yeah, it was fun because I could play with my peers, learn more, climb the tree, ride bikes, always have food on time, doesn't have to worry about going on survival mode, so didn't have to worry about that.
Did you feel safe in the home system?
I kind of do feel safe at that time, even though we do get disciplined. That was years ago. We do get disciplined, but it was safe.
And did it feel like a family? What did it feel like to you? Or did it feel like you were, what was it felt like as the environment there for you?
It felt like everything was on you, and you don't know how to express your voice or say what you want because you're still a child, and not all the times the staff would understand that at the homes. So it made me feel more like I'm isolated in a small little bubble, even though I'm trying to get out of that. So
there was a feeling of loneliness within it, and you felt the separation. And I think you had one or two of your brothers with you.
Yes, I have two of my brothers with me at that time at the hostel. And from there, we went to Cat Island, Old Bike Officer Chapel Mission Home.
Okay, so you were transferred to the Cat Island Children's Home, and you spent some time there. What was your experience like in Cat Island? Did it differ in any way?
Way different. The staff is more loving, calm.
And you're an island boy. You like fishing. You like farming. We'll get more into that. But you like being free.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I love those stuff about the islands. I fall in love with the islands during my time at the Old Bygossa Chapel Mission Home. I learned a lot of stuff there. It really did feel like family, you know. The Advance the Faith is come down every year to do Vacation Bible School, and that's where I become more open up at that time because I was scared to talk. I don't even talk much when I was at each of the homes, by the way. I stay in my bubble. I still play and what's not, but I don't talk
much. You hadn't found a voice at this time. And then some years later, I know you came and you joined us at Ranfurly Homes for Children on Mackey Street. We've been there for many, many decades now. And I remember you also as quiet, kind, conscientious. And about your time there is that you spearheaded our farming initiative. We had Mr. Alexander Roberts of Queen's College fame, and who also came to serve as our administrator for many years. And you two worked together and you got some chickens and you started producing eggs. And that was really under your lead, which I think coming from your childhood, which you experienced food insecurity and food scarcity, it was so beautiful that you worked in that regard. Do you think that began your interest in the agricultural field?
Yes, it do. I had a had an interest of agriculture when I was in Kerr Island because it's a big yard. We do farming, we climb trees, pick fruits and et cetera, tie turtles. I'm not sure where the idea was came to do the chicken coop, but I remember Mr. Roberts said, so we are going to get some chicks and I'm looking for volunteers to take care of
this. And you were, not all of the children were as into chickens as Evan was, and you were devoted.
Yes, I was. And then you had like 10 people raise up their hands, he writing their names down and what's not, and they back away. Mm-hmm. And it was only me once started, and I was like, okay, I will take it, you know. It's more calm, it made me calm being in nature, watching the chicks grow to become chickens. And, you know, it's feel good to know that you saw something small and become big and producing eggs. So that's good.
And how was the academic side of life and the social side of life as a teenager in Ranfurly? Was that more of a struggle?
Yes, it was a struggle. Like I said, my mom is a Haitian, and then I didn't learn much English, so I had to learn English. At this time, I can't even speak Creole like that, so I had to relearn everything, and that was a big gap when I was in school. So, and then I was pretty good at my hands and what's not, but
you were, which would I think lay the groundwork for which we will go in a little while, which is what you're doing now, and the entrepreneurial spirit that is carrying you forward now. However, I do want to catch Richard up to this part of the story. And I don't know how I should address you now that you're a graduate of Eugene DePuch Law School and heading towards the court systems and looking like a tree in his white shirt and black tie, ladies. Can you take us back now to your beginnings? Do you have earliest childhood memories? What do you remember the beginning of your life being like, Richard?
Yes. I was born in Bacardi Road. So my auntie always tells me the story. I wasn't born in PMH, so the ambulance never came on time. So I have a connection to the Bacardi Road, the Haitian village area. So every so often I would go back there. But early on, the village was very loving. I mean, we didn't have enough, like, because we grew up poor, not fortunate, but it was a very loving environment. I like to go back there because my daddy still lives in that area. But it kind of started to went downhill for me and my brother after our mom died. Because she was still loving. She, you know, she did what she could to provide for us. So after she died when I was about 4 or 5. And then at the same time, my father, he got deported. So we came from Haitian background. So,
yes.
And we end up with our uncle. And that wasn't the best situation because he was abusive, straight up abusive, you know. It wasn't a loving environment. You know, I could remember going to school and begging for food to eat, you know, from my classmates. And I remember my teacher, she would always call him. So I know once I got home, I would get beaten. And then if I came home dirty, I know I was getting beaten. You could imagine a 5-year-old running around. They're not paying attention to getting dirt on themselves. So, and I know I was getting beaten. So that wasn't the best situation. I could remember one day I was on the playground by myself and social service came. There were two late, lovely ladies. They came and they collect me and my brother. And then they transported us to the Nazareth Center for Children's in Millennial Gardens. So that started the journey in the system for me and my brother.
Do you have any remembrance of what that felt like to be taken and to be put into a home at that age? I mean, you have such a clear memory, I'm sure, that is, mm-hmm. you know, obviously cased in trauma, and that the trauma that was normalized, you expected it. This was not, you know, this was not a once in a while occasion. You knew that you were coming home to beatings. You were coming home to an environment that was unsafe. So do you have any memory of what it felt like to be taken from that and put into Nazareth at the time? Were you, was it frightening? Was it a relief? Can you recall?
It was frightening and a relief at the same time because I'm going with these people who I don't know. Mm-hmm. And then once I realized I was in a safe environment, I kind of started to let my guard down because it was a loving environment because I could still remember Miss Taylor, mm-hmm. Miss Strawn. You know, they made sure we was good, you know. We had 3 meals a day, you know, even though they used to wake us up early. 3 meals a day. We had breakfast, lunch, dinner. You know, these things, like, I didn't have when me and my brother were out of homes with our uncle, you know, because, like I said, he was abusive and he used to find ways, you know, to make us suffer. So, but in the homes, it was loving, you know.
And you felt safe there?
Yeah, I could instantly feel the difference once I got there.
Did you develop friendships at that time at a younger age that you held on to?
Yes, a lot of the individuals that I went into the homes with, that came into the system as well, a lot of them stayed in the system with us. So, people like Livingston, the Knowles brothers, Livingston, Andrew, who else? Caleb, Tamiko. Tamiko and Tyrone, and then you got Letizia, Richard King. So a lot of them stayed in the system, and we stayed in the system. So we just developed, like, you know, we basically family, you know. So at the end of the day, so we became siblings, you know, sure that we check up on each other. So those are some of the relationships that I developed.
And it's important for us that are on the other side of it, that are working to support the home systems mm-hmm. in whatever way. Ramfley Homes for Children yes. is the only private home, so we're always begging for
yes,
funds.
It's very important.
But we understand that there is no perfecting childhood for you. There's no. We hope for healing. We hope for a constructive adulthood. But I think that we have to be reminded that we as a community need to invest in family restoration, and that there's a hope that when you're in the home systems, there's some manner of family you can claim. But there is an understanding that the loss of your mother, the loss of a father, the loss of your family as young boys can't be replaced, and that the courage you have when you're stepping into adulthood to look at maybe one day and with Evans already forming new families takes great bravery. So I commend you on that. Then you came to Ramfley a little older. Do you have any memories of your time there?
Yes. I can still remember when I left because I was with some people that knew my mommy. But that over time, it was a good situation in the beginning, but over time, it had gotten bad. The beatings came back, you know. Mm-hmm. It wasn't the best situation. I could still remember one time me and my brother went to school, and the gentleman that we was living with, he intentionally gap up our head. We called gap up. Like, we had patches all over our head, and we had to go to school, and the children was teasing us, you know. I used to get bullied, too, because, like Evans, I'm a Haitian background. So we had to wear a hat in school. My teacher allowed me to wear a hat. So I could still remember stuff like that where it was just, like, pure evil, you know. But, and then I end up in children's emergency hostel for 1 year. I did my grade 6 year there at Carmichael Primary. I developed more relationships there. One of my closest friends, Nathaniel, I met him at Children's Emergency Hostel. And we both graduated primary school together. And then I can still remember that July day in 2010, summer 2010, when we came over to the Ramfley Homes for Children. So that was we always heard stories about Ramfley, you know, so. And how fun it was. So we was excited to go there. So.
And you're always charming, charismatic, and you have resulted in doing excellently in your academic journey. Now, I want to ask what might be a little bit of a difficult question for both of you, and I was going to leave it for later in the show, but if this is a call-in show, we'd love to hear from you. We'd love to hear the stories. Last week when we were hosting or a couple of weeks ago hosting our Rantfully raffle, we had a gentleman who came in and said, you know, I haven't been back here since I was 2. I grew up in Rantfully, happened to be adopted to another island, and he's working now, Jet Aviation, giving you a shout-out. But it's always good to, if anyone has a story, if you've stood in this place, if you have some encouragement or advice for these young men, we appreciate you calling in. However, I have had a text, and I knew this would come up, because, yes, these young men are Haitian Bahamians. They have Haitian and Bahamian blood in them. However, they are born in the Bahamas. They are Bahamians, and they are our children. When children pass into the system, even if they are of Haitian descent, when they're in the children's home, they are Bahamians. We are in charge of them. We are their guardians of the state. With all of the other things we try to put into place, making sure that there's positive community mentorship, making sure there's life skills, making sure there's career and financial counseling, getting documentation and a sense of citizenship and belonging in place is important. I'm going to read this text, but I read it with a mother's heart that feels protective of you, so I'm going to try not to be biased in answering it for you. And it says, while I abhor what these young men have endured, the question is, what is their attitudes toward Bahamians and the Bahamas, and where is your allegiance? Do you feel like you're a Bahamian? Richard, your hand is up.
I try not to get into conversations like that because I'm born in the Bahamas, so I'm Bahamian. But at the same time, I do appreciate my Haitian background because I do love my sauce bois.
Yes.
I love my legume, you know, but at the same time,
I love my Haitian food too.
I love my Kong salad, you know, but it's very weird because when people hear the name and the last name, they be like, are you Haitian? So I can't never escape it. So I always tell people I'm proud of my Bahamian side and I'm proud of my Haitian side because no matter where I go, people are always going to remind me, even though I don't like it, that I'm Haitian. So I have no other choice but to embrace it. But my allegiance is to the Bahamas.
And it's interesting you said I can't escape it.
Yes.
Rather than claim it, escaping, almost like it's something that, does it feel like a source of shame to have a Haitian background? Or is it something you feel like you wish you could conceal or hide living in the Bahamas? Do you feel like it is held against you? Evans, do you have thoughts on this?
I don't believe that it held against me, to be honest. Living in the Bahamas have a lot of benefit, and I appreciate that I'm living in the Bahamas. It's come with costs as well, too, because my mom came here. She's been here about 50 years or so. And so being a Bahamian, I'm a Bahamian. I would say I'm a Bahamian because my dad is a Bahamian, even though my mom was a Haitian. I learn a lot from both sides, and it's also good to know where you came from or where your ancestors came from, because it's very important as well too, to know different language, to know different countries, how they act, how they carry on, and what's the history of it. So you gotta have a mental idea of those countries' rules and the way they deal with stuff.
Yeah.
And that we build relationships.
And understand your soul. Because I feel in the Bahamas, we won the geographical lottery when it came to where most of us ended up and how our history has developed. We actually do have a caller. I'm going to go ahead and tap that in right now. Good morning. You're on the air. Welcome to Guardian Radio. Good morning. Oh, they've gone. Well, I'm proud of you, gentlemen, and I always like the quote that Nelson Mandela said, that the truth of a society's soul is the manner in which we treat our children, and that I ask and impeach us as Bahamian people to understand that the children that come into our systems are ours, that the way in which we treat them, guide them, and raise them up will be how they respond and answer to these things. Another text is coming is, why is the question so hard to answer? You should not be ashamed of being Haitian, bro, considering the narrative. You don't have to say Bahamians don't like Haitians. Personally, the text is cut off. But again, it's a part of the conversation, and we hear it in almost everything that comes up. I'm going to try this caller again. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hey, morning. How are you doing? Yes.
All the better after hearing your voice.
Right, I'm on. Tell your guest there, right? Once he can say the word, such as? And he can say, my boy.
Yeah.
And he don't eat. And he will eat raisins and coleslaw, he's a Bahamian.
Thank you.
You put raisins in them coleslaw,
yeah,
and mayonnaise inside that Kong salad,
you're being deported.
Boy, that's the problem.
Yeah, tell that to the Freeport people then, because they've been mayonnaise in the Kong salad.
But you sound of you sound like a gentleman of some years. Do you have any words of advice? Oh, he's gone. I think we believe as the people that are behind and cheering you on, that no child should have to choose between survival and belonging. I think it's Scrooge. What is the tagline of Scrooge Valentino Brown show every Friday? That the place I belong did not exist until I created it. That your act of recovery, your act of healing is an act of creation. You have to have a tremendous imagination to see a spot for yourself in this country, to see yourself thriving in it, and to have the sheer nerve to reach out and grab it. So we got through Ranfurly. I wanted to ask what helped and what hurt. I think we touched on that a little bit. Do you have any other points you want to say of what you found helpful or hurtful in your years there?
Sure. Also, I know you got to shout out all the young people who want to join the National Guard. It's very, very good to have your service to help your family islands and even through the Caribbean. So my ups and downs in the Ranfurly home, that's a good one. My ups and downs in Ranfurly home, it was really, I wouldn't say scary, but afraid that I'm going to a different system. And also I have bonds in Cat Island. I make bonds with my brothers and sisters in Cat Island. So that was the difference. And I remember the system also saying, hey, Evans, I will call on you to check on how y'all doing. And she's called the homes and check on us how we're doing. And at that time, I learned a lot from being in Nassau, certain stuff I didn't learn. And also, I had a lot of opportunities in Ranfurly as well, too. So we went to Atlantis. I never saw Atlantis before. We played sports. We went to the stadium. We did a lot of activities. That was pretty good to get me thinking outside the bubble a little bit, just not island life, so.
I did a survey a few years ago, and it says after home care, after foster care survival. And it said one of the things, I wonder if you agree with this, one of the things that are the difference makers are trusted connections with the community, outside community, and in that having a mentor that can help you with life skills, decisions, resources, accountability. Developing healthy relationships outside of the home that can walk with you when you age out and you transition. And of course, Ranfurly is trying to help that we've now built behind our standing buildings on Mackey Street so that children have somewhere to go after they leave Ranfurly. Community groups, sports, churches, faith-based groups, that's being, along with educational career support, along with protection and from negative relationships to break the cycle, along with getting your documents in order. Were there any mentorships that really stood out to you that helped you step into the world after Ranfurly? And then I want to get into your successes afterwards.
Yes. So after I left Ranfurly, because as you guys know, I love the basketball. So basketball was my first love.
Yes, you mean more than the books, Richard?
Yeah, basketball is my first love. I got to put that out there. Kevin Johnson, he's the head coach at the C.I. Gibson High School. So
shout out.
Yeah, shout out to Kevin Johnson. So a few Christmas, because in the Christmas round, Ranfurly closes. Yes. So they allow us to go with different mentors.
Yes,
so
I had seven kids in my house one year.
Yes. So a few Christmas, I was with him. And after I left Ranfurly, I was unsure where I was going to go. And then the idea came up that, we are going to go with Mr. J. So Mr. J provided that, that transitional home for a few of us that were in the Ranfurly homes. So I just want to put that out there and shout him out. So he was somebody that mentored a few of us and also provided housing for a few of us and people that came after me as well, too. So.
And we've had so many remarkable mentors, and the men, I give a shout out to the men in our society that have stepped up to father the fatherless, to be there for our young people. But the relationships developed during your years there are what really held your hand as you step forward and into the community. And it's something we continue to invite into our home systems, that if you have the ability to mentor and people, there are opportunities open to do so. Evans, did you have a mentor or people in your life that made a difference and stood out to you?
Yes, Mom. I have the three mentors. I have Darren Clare. He also came to the Ramfley home teaching us how to play the piano, the guitars. Also, I had Mr. Allen. He also came after church from church. Mm-hmm. We used to go by his house to watch a Christian movie, hang out, talk a little more.
Give you a little family time. Yeah. Feel like you're at home.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I had him also. And I also had the Advance the Faith. Tom, I just found out that he passed away like 4 days ago. He was a mentor with me, teaching me how to dive in and build my faith with God. So.
And I don't want to put words in your mouth, but don't you have one good boss now that was maybe in Ranfurly?
Yes. I have Alexandra Mills Lynch. Mm-hmm. She is my mentor at the moment. She always on me. Hey, you know, I need you.
Calling
you
this morning to see if you had the radio show on time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, she did. She did. So she very important to me. She pushed me. Having somebody to push you and support you, and you go to basically anything or how you feel or what's going on and what's not, that's very important, because they will encourage you and motivate you and tell you X, Y, and Z. You shouldn't do that. You should do this way or wait.
The accountability.
You
know.
Yeah.
Because I think I know that any of us who are listening that are parents that have children or know how much you have to be on it, even in a healthy, stable, normal home, we're going through the tests, the spelling words. Shout out to my teachers. I love you, Queens College. We're making sure they're clothed. We're making sure they're dressed. And so these young people don't necessarily have all of that all the time from one person. So we seek the community partnerships so we can have a flight plan going forward. Because whatever happens of these kids will be the joy or the curse of our society moving forward. And we're going to a break, but when we come back, I want to talk about what we're doing now in our life and your career successes and goals, and maybe get some support for some of our projects going on with Evans. Thank you so much for tuning in to Guardian Radio.
Just sign in and have a seat, please. They'll call you in for your x-ray shortly.
That's why they call it a waiting room. You won't have that problem at Fourth Terrace Diagnostic Center or Imaging at Groner. We never schedule multiple appointments, so you'll be in and out in no time. And if your initial screening reveals a concern, our radiologist can conduct an alternative screening right then and there. Call 37 to schedule an appointment at Fourth Terrace Diagnostic Center or Imaging at Groner today.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Are you searching for something new? Something exciting? Your dream job in paradise? Well, look no further. Royal Beach Club Paradise Island is hiring. Join a dynamic group of passionate hospitality professionals, craft unforgettable moments, and thrive in a vibrant, welcoming atmosphere. Play your part in shaping the future of our team while growing your own career every day. Bring your energy, your passion, and your creativity to a workplace that's as dynamic and fun as you are. At Royal Beach Club Paradise Island, the opportunities don't just exist. They're limitless. So are you ready to find your perfect fit? Visit Royal Beach Club at paradiseisland.com/career today and step into a world of exciting possibilities.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, streaming on guardiantalkradio.com. and the Guardian Radio app, Nassau, Bahamas.
Well, Good morning and welcome back to Guardian Radio in the AM. I am your host for the day, courtesy of my friend C.A. Nuri. I'm Catherine Chisnell Mitchell. And in this studio, we have Mr. Richard Estime and Mr. Evans Presume, who have been brave and authentic in sharing their childhood stories of growing up in the home care system. But now I want to segue of the successes on the other side. Now, I say successes knowing that it comes hand in hand with struggle, knowing that every day you're doing your best, trying your best to make things happen, and it's not always easy, and it's not always like what you'd see on the Instagram post. But I want you now to talk about the bright postcards of our life and where we're at. Who wants to get us started with the update of where they're at and with their accomplishments and goals right now? Our new graduate. All right, go ahead. Let's tell us where we're at and what we've just accomplished.
Okay, so I just recently graduated from the Eugene Puch Law School.
Very proud.
In September. And then on October 31st, 2025, I was called to the bar of the Bahamas. So now I'm officially a counsel and attorney at law.
And this is not professional, but you look good.
Yes, ma'am.
You look so grown up and so handsome, and you made so many people inspired and proud. Well done. And where do we want to go with this? What's the, if you could say the big dream is, what would the vision be going forward?
I kind of leave it open because I feel like when I leave it open, like any interests that come along with along the journey, then I could take it like to wherever I want to go, like as far as I want to take it. So I kind of just leave it open.
So what's the next right step? If you could say in this time, then next year, I would like to be working at, where would you like your next right step to be?
Hopefully I want to be working by the courts, or hopefully find a firm to do my pupillage in. So that's what I'm looking forward to.
So if anyone's listening who wants an excellent young attorney or intern to come, I can highly recommend Mr. Richard Estime. Please reach out and please find, he's highly employable, he's motivated, he's handsome, he's charming, he's fun, but also he would be a delight and a resource for you all. And yes, Evans, we are here and we have some, I wish we were on camera because he brought some really cute little things into the studio. Evans, can you tell me a little bit about what you're new to today?
Yes, ma'am. So I have microgreens here. I have sunflower. I have radish, two different type of radish. I have bok choy. That's just some of the stuff I do have. The rest of the stuff I've grown at the moment, but they are not ready as yet. So the microgreens, a lot of people don't know microgreens. It's very...
Let me just stop you 1 minute, mm-hmm. Because he's talking so passionately about his beautiful microgreens in front of him that will make me want lunch. The reason we're talking about them are because you are supporting our agrarian community and the farmers, because without food stability and without food stability, we're nothing as a country. And you have chosen to enter into a business of farming, have built your own greenhouse right in the back of Adelaide, are doing a great job. And the reason we're talking about, because you've started a business and you have these for sale. Now tell us about your loves.
Yes, thank you. These microgreens are very, they have a lot of proteins in it. They also have a lot of vitamins in it as well too. So they have vitamin A, vitamin C, vitamin E, vitamin K. You can make smoothies with them. You got it to your side. To be honest,
Is that why your skin is glowing, Evans?
Yes. I like farming. I like growing stuff. And when it comes down to salad, I just don't like that behemoth. It's a little boring-ish, you know? You want to spice it up, so I grow these other microgreens. You could put it into your salad. Instead
and these are exciting. These are attractive. Yeah. I mean, I almost thought this was a Valentine's bouquet coming in today. They're beautiful. But why did you feel called to do to work in this area? I know we talked about Ranfurly, the chickens, the eggs, your interest in working with your hands. But why did this feel purposeful for you?
That's a good question. I did work at Bluefield Farms, not like 3 weeks or so. They grow microgreens there. So I learned a lot from there. And there's something I didn't want to do before I went to Bluefield Farm. And
you're continuing with that. I'm only interrupting you because we have a caller. So okay. Let's see who's on the line. Good morning. You're on the air. Good morning.
Hey, morning. Tell your guests you need to grow some lemons and limes. You yeah. Been in the food store. See me for lemon and lime?
They make me great. Now, listen, I cook. Yes.
$3.65.
Mm-hmm. You're not wrong.
People in the hood ain't slanging lime.
Mm-hmm.
They are very expensive. I believe what the government's trying to do at the moment, trying to have a lot of people to go in farming mode so that they could provide products for the Bahamian people.
Mm-hmm. And I had the honor to attend the Agrarian Awards a few weeks ago, and I was really inspired by some of the farming initiatives. But as a cook, I remember the grape citrus shortage we had a few years back, and I grieved it. I grieved it because without it, we can't scorch our conch. We can't mm-hmm. season our food. You know, we don't cook meat without lemon all over it. Or maybe that's the Greek Bahamian in me. But I mean, I agree. I support this call. Thank you, sir. And Richard didn't ask you the purpose question. Why did you feel called to enter into law? Was there a particular reason you're like, this is the step I want to take?
I remember going into university. I was unsure, but I know I just liked the law aspect. So I was leaning more towards criminology, mm-hmm. but I also knew, like, I like to speak on social issues, like a lot of the stuff, like what's going on in the Democratic Republic of Congo and a lot of, you know, where people are misplaced. So I just like to bring awareness about situations like that. So I think that's what pushed me into the law, the human rights law aspect of law. So that's what really pushed me into
the law. We need people to humanize the law. All my family are lawyers. Shout out to all of you. No, but I appreciate your intelligence and your ability to speak on these subjects and your passion for it. So I thank you. It inspires me to see a young man have this in them. And I have to go back to Evans 1 second because I have to ask you. Evans, you have the joy and duty of being a father. You have entered into fatherhood, and so you have the tremendous mantle of raising a daughter with your limited support systems and making sure she eats all these greens that you're growing. How do you find, like, what is it like to be a fatherhood without the traditional family network around you?
It's fun at the same time. I do have a daughter. She's very fun. She's happy to see greens. She told me yesterday, hey, Daddy, when we going to plant some more microgreens? I told her so soon as I finish selling some of these microgreens. She's very passionate. She's very smart for her age. I have no complaint. But being a father is it comes with its own challenges. You know, co-parenting and what's not, trying to make sure that my daughter's okay and she get what she needed to get and et cetera. But other than that, everything is fine.
Because we asked you about your purpose, but I have to jump here and say that your daughter, I won't call her a name on air, who she's very gorgeous and charming, but she's my purpose. My purpose is to make sure that she doesn't end up in the home system. Our purpose is that we here as a community, I think as a whole Bahamas, want to make sure that we're breaking these cycles. We've discussed all the time with every headlines the fact that the nuclear family is at risk, that the support for young black men are at risk in poverty, that are limited by opportunities, that are limited by education. And so to me, and whatever your suffering was and you were burned in soul and body, that the fact that she be protected, that she be uplifted, that she grow become ever so important. And I know we're nearing the end of the show, and I want to give you both your final words, but I want to say to every child still in the foster care system, you are not broken. You are not invisible. Your voice matters more than you know. And to those in power, please listen and let their pain shape our politics and allow their courage to inspire you. We need to let truth and connection and true family and healthy community bonds rebuild and reform our system. And we need that future to start now. Now, I say that not knowing what it's like to stand in your shoes. I just get to kneel down and lace them up with everyone in my community that does it with me. Again, I went into the homes of Alexander Malis Lynch. Joey Premock is our president now. We have so many, too many people to name that have come into the homes. But what would you like to say what do you want to say on this subject? What would your hope be for the home system, for people that are now looking forward to where you're at?
My hopes is that the people continue supporting the children who are vulnerable, who need help, and et cetera, because you might never know one day they might be the next prime minister of the Bahamas. So it's good to have that bond, that
community. Or as important, your mechanic, or your farmer, yeah. or your lawyer, or all the other things that are just as important, yes.
And it doesn't matter how you started, it's matter how you finish. So that's very important as well. Even though you had a rough road, it also mattered, like, hey, I know I have rough, but let me make something out of my life. Let me figure it out. Let me, because I know I have got me up, I could talk to. They will guide me because I want to become somebody in society. So that's very important.
And you are somebody in society, and you're relied on and you're counted on. And you just spent last few weeks driving around my one good cousin with her broken arm, because people trust you and rely on you, and you never fail to make people smile when you show up into their lives. Yes, Richard, show us some wisdom. I know you lawyers like to talk.
Well, I would just piggyback off Evans and say, Evans is only possible because, and I'm only possible because people were able to come back, come to the Rafferty and pour into us and mentor us and, you know, give us light, you know, that regardless of our situation and our upbringing, you know, we could be something in society. So I just want to tell people, you know, just, I mean, it don't have to be a monetary donation, but just come back, you know, speak to the children, you know. A lot of the times when I was there and people came just to speak with me, I loved that, you know, because it was new faces, you know. So just come there, speak to the children, you know, and just have a sit down with them. So
I know I'm answering a question I know the answer to, but are you both returning? Are you going back? Are you reinvesting back into the community?
That's the intention. Yes, ma'am.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, ma'am.
Shout out to Mr. Moscow as well, too. Mm-hmm. He helped Bramfley and other children home a lot.
For many years. Yeah. Yes, and tirelessly. So we thank him. And again, so many different supporters. Now, I don't want to end on a negative note, but we're a small country. And as you come out of the homes, there's also a lot of things you have to maintain protection from. You have to not enter back into toxic relationships, whether or not they're actual relatives or not, toxic environment, because that's where home feels like. How do you go about protecting yourself from re-entering relationships that may drain or demotivate you? What do you do to stay safe from that, so that you don't end up back where you came from, basically?
Family wasn't really supportive. So I knew my people. So mm-hmm. I always tell people, find your people. So
chosen family.
Yeah. So when I came into the homes, like, I knew my people. And when I came out the homes and I entered university, there was a lot of friends that I met along the journey that were very supportive of me. Shout out the company. That's for Shadows. Also Hubert. So a lot of them supported me. So I knew who to go towards, you know, because I was able to differentiate between, how could I say it, people that would support me and people that wouldn't support me, because I experienced it early on. So,
yeah.
I'm glad you came to talk about that. So support is very important, family, choosing family. And relationship-wise, you have to, if you're going to talk to somebody, like in my case, if I'm going to talk to somebody, I got to find out their attention and also if it's benefit. Because not all the time you want to have somebody you always, you know, don't give, encourage you, giving you right words and what's not, and always have that negative. That's a no-no when it comes down to building relationship, any type of relationship. You always want to look at people who are positive. Because mm-hmm. positive become positivity, mm-hmm. you know. So that's very important to me. I'm a guy who tracing after that light. Mm-hmm. No, I'm not looking behind me. I'm looking forward. I want to look for the goal. So,
and as you know now, as a true parent, and I say true parent because you could have children and not be a parent, you know that once you have a daughter, your heart no longer lives inside of your body for the rest mm-hmm. of your life. And so that you're living for her and you're creating worlds and opportunities and purposes, and you're inspiring us all, because we can live griping and complaining, but we can also live uplifted and knowing we truly are the best little country in the world with the strongest souls and citizens, and that we love and respect our lawyers. You know we do. But our farmers are what's going to be salvific for us. That is what is going to save us and keep us alive. Yes. And I think what's beautiful is when we came through COVID and we saw the world shutting us down and shutting us out, we could be fed and that we could be cared for and that we could be taken care from for with our own hands in our own soil is something that is beautiful and worthy and essential work. But to both of you, I have to say that I know I'm talking to young men here, so I do not mean to condescend, but I'm also a mom. And when I think of what you've been through and the biblical verse of not to touch a hair on their head, I wish that you had not had a hair on your head touched. I wish that you had had healthy and whole childhoods. But your courage and healing and going forward is beautiful to behold. And we know all the great quotes on courage that say that it's not to act without fear, it's to act despite of it. And I see you both claiming that, your fear, claiming your cultural heritage and makeup and the jigsaw puzzle that is our traumas, and still deciding to make a beautiful picture out of it. So I thank you so much for being here with us today, and for your bravery, and for your beauty. Y'all showed up so nicely today. And I lived annoying them. I was texting them saying, you're good for tomorrow. We're going to see you tomorrow. We're going to be there. And they both beat me to the studio today. And I have no doubt that as we see the years go and the continue to have stories unfold, because you have friends that have good stories around us. We've had Bernishka Bullard on the show before. Yeah. Yes. We've heard successes. We've also heard disappointments. So let us to parent, to uplift, to engage, to involve ourselves. If you have any interest in mentoring or being a part of a volunteer corps at Ranfurly Homes for Children, please drop by or give us a call. If you want to be a part of the solution that is restructuring family, creating family restoration, and sometimes it's not the people you share blood with, please reach out and get involved. And I thank you today for making me proud to be Bahamian and to be here.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you for having us here also.
Thank you.
Story.
I think we're still on the air, so if any of y'all want to drop a shout out or a note to any of your things, or if Evans, you wanted to say where people could reach you for your microgreens.
Yes. You could reach me at 468-3913 Green Hydro.
Green Hydro. And what kind of lead time do we need? If I was like, great, I'm having a dinner party and I need enough for a salad for 30 people, what kind of lead time do you need on that?
A week.
A week?
A week.
And you'll deliver?
Yes, deliver. No charge.
And again, Richard Estime is highly employable. And he's a good poster child for the business. But I just want to tell you both how much I appreciate you doing what you do and as you do it, because my goodness, it's easy to look on the dark side of the headlines. But you are all both doing that which we need in the country, which is stepping up, showing up, and doing well. Yes, Richard?
I would also like to shout out Mr. Roberts. He was the administrator when I was there.
Alexander Roberts. He was my one good principal in Queens College. Yes, Lady Chisnell, are you wearing a mini today? I'm still scared. He only had to say it once. Yeah. I never wore a dress above my knee for the rest of my life. But yes, he was a remarkable person in the years. And I think we're going. I'm sorry, caller. Our show is ending. Thank you so much for being here today. Thank you again to Guardian Radio for allowing this conversation. And I wish you all a beautiful, uplifting, and courageous week.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Streaming on GuardianTalkRadio.com and the Guardian Radio app. Nassau, Bahamas.